Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horrible Podcast. I'm Brian.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew.
And welcome to another edition of our show. Man, Drew, I don't know what it is about your website these last couple of weeks, but you've been really clear. It hasn't been grainy or anything at all.
His website?
Your internet. So they decided to up, like, oh, let's give him some more speed now.
Yeah, I don't know.
150 down, 150 up.
Right, like, right before you move, it's like, hey, just letting you know, we've upped your internet speed for free.
Good luck. Good luck with that, moving stuff.
Not actually changing anything service-wise, so.
Yeah, but you look so much clearer. I just feel like I could reach out and scratch your beard.
It's a soft. It's softer, too. Softer.
Episode 105, Ciento y Cinco.
I'm writing that down. Drew's internet speeds require
our banter, our pre-episode banter of internet speeds, you know, the normal podcasting topics. I also have a notebook now, so we're all just gonna be competing with our notes.
You're keeping show notes now?
I'm going analog though. I'm bucking the trend. I think having a digital to-do list and whatnot is causing too much anxiety, so I just write everything
vinyl
down now.
I'm going to
vinyl.
I lean towards agreeing with you on that. I think it's great that I can have everything synced up, but I don't ever check it.
Yeah, I don't either. Like, I'm great at making to-do lists, and like today I looked at one I hadn't looked at in months. I was like, oh, I did need to do those things. Like, I'm great at writing, like putting them into it, but like with a physical one, like if you carry around a notebook, you're constantly looking at it because you're like, oh, I need to write something down, I need to delete it. But with your phone, it's just like another distraction. So I've gone vinyl. I've gone to the vinyl equivalent.
I see people with their like planners. I'm like, planners? What year is this? And then yesterday I got yelled at for not like you know when the last day of Jackson's school is. Like, I put it in my calendar. I haven't looked.
I still use a digital calendar for like events. Like if something needs to happen, I still need to get those like. I need to get those things, but with like my daily to do, I just make because it's way too easy with a digital thing to like type in a bunch of stuff and then have 30 or 40 things on your list and then be able to do five of them. So I'm writing stuff down. And you're like, oh, realistically, I could get five things done today. So that's where I'm going. I think that's the way to go productivity wise.
For anybody listening to, who's new to the show, if we gave you the impression that we talk about horror films, that is wrong. We're talking about the horrors of technology and everyday
life. We're actually transitioning to become a technology podcast. We're actually going to be called the Technologable Podcast.
Ooh, I like it.
Technologable.
You go ahead and figure out how we're going to spell that one.
I'm actually going to work on that right now. Technology.
Right.
It'd be
right
tech now. And then knowledgeable.
Knowledge.
It'd be tech knowledgeable.
T-E-C-A.
No,
N-O-W-L-E.
No, knowledge, but it would be B-U-L-L.
Like, right.
Or technologable.
We're just going to add a Bluetooth headset to the bull.
It's going to be wearing glasses and a Bluetooth.
This week's episode is sponsored by Nokia.
A Palm Pilot. I've got my PDA right here. I never had one of those. I skipped that. Brian, did you have a PDA?
I had a BlackBerry.
Your first smartphone was a BlackBerry, right?
Yeah, and it was pretty useless for anything but email. It's all about email. Like, you couldn't, like, do internet on it.
Yeah, because
you could, but it was really slow.
Yeah, I remember people being obsessed.
It was all controlled by the scroll wheel, too, wasn't it? Didn't have a side. You had to just kind of scroll through.
Brian, did you ever have one?
I had a Palm Pilot. I did.
Would you find it useful?
No, it absolutely didn't do anything I wanted to do. Like, every morning I had to get up and sync my news stories. So I also used Mac, so it wasn't really made for Mac.
Synchronized system or whatever.
Yeah, it's like when my friends are like, oh man, iTunes, fuck it, you know, it's so bloated, it's got all this stuff, you should use an Android, and I'm like, let me tell you what, I used Palm and a Mac, and all the little extra things I had to download to make that work together. It's not worth it. I'll just use what Apple's telling me to use.
I totally skipped all of that. Like, I went from flip phone, and then I did something that was halfway between a flip phone and a smartphone, and then I wisened up and got an iPhone. I didn't get an iPhone until 2010. Like, I was 3 years past the ball on that.
Well, Drew definitely led the charge on iPhones.
And I got it as soon as you get it at a not Apple store. That was the thing.
Yeah. I bought my, I had an HTC something that I was like, oh, I need a real keyboard.
No. So funny. No, the I had a Samsung that was halfway between an iPhone and a Samsung phone, and it was awful. I hated every... It whenever you typed, it buzzed with every letter that you typed, and I hated it. It also it had apps, but you could move them around on the screen, and if you tapped it, but your finger didn't land squarely on it, instead of opening the app, it would just move the app. It was the worst. I hated it.
Well, it's a, yeah, like I said, that BlackBerry was not, you know, I wasn't a businessman needing to send emails all the time.
You weren't like an aide to the president or something. Like, that's the only, that and business people are the only two reasons I would see you needing a BlackBerry at all. But there, people still have them, don't they?
Because, I mean, I think it's, I don't know. Why, I don't know what purpose it would serve now. Didn't Research in Motion have to deal with some sort of lawsuit as well or something? I thought at some point.
I always wanted to get a rim job.
You, Brian, you had a pager, I'm sure, at some point, right?
I never had a pager.
Really?
I had friends that had.
Surprises me.
Yeah, I had friends that had pagers, and I was just not. I was like, every time I'm around you guys, I'm with the people I need to be.
Right. Yeah.
With. I don't need a pager.
I never had a pager. I never had any of that. Like, I only came sort of I always eschewed new technologies because I was like, oh, man, I did it the way that, like, I always looked at all technologies the way I looked at video game consoles. Like, I'm just going to wait until it's affordable. And I kind of did that with phones, too. I'm never, like, the first guy to get a thing because it usually doesn't work. Like, it just usually doesn't actually do anything. Like, they're always so broken and buggy when they first come out. So anyway, that's our technologiable segment.
I guess that transitions in the movie, kind of. He uses technology.
Yeah, totally. This is actually apropos. This is not, we are not doing just sort of like a shitty segment. No, it's actually, I think what we'll slowly do is we'll slowly transition from horrible to technologiable. We'll just... Like it's kind of like we're moving stuff to the back. We're boxing things up. We're just slowly
calling
moving.
This. Well, we all can agree that for the most part, cell phones have ruined horror films.
Yeah,
so it's a technology is kind of a horror in itself for that.
It has become a thing that you have to explain away, and it's always it's an exposition moment. Like it's the kind of exposition thing where in a world where there are cell phones, you have to then have a scene where you talk about the cell phones. It's like the scene where you're like, oh man, like if you know they're going to have to flip a switch later because they're like, oh man, here's the switch. If you flip the switch at the wrong time, everything blows up. And cell phones are like that. So they can be the worst part. But I don't like as far as interior goes.
Hey, so by the way, the movie we're talking about tonight, this episode is a movie called Interior.
Well, hopefully they're not just like blindly listening to it. Hopefully they've looked at it. Like,
what if they have a podcast app and they're like, oh, I'll just listen to the new episode. They haven't even looked at what's going on.
There you go. Well, Interior.
Yeah. I do think it's interesting to a recent film. It follows that Denville had to explain away the cell phone at all. They put it in that weird, you can't tell what time period it is.
No, you could. Yeah.
And all there was that clamshell reader, and then no one had a cell phone, and no one seemed to care. It didn't even come up.
You know? Yeah, I don't know how many movies though can we have like that. Do you think?
Oh, not many. I wouldn't.
Do you think? I mean, but what if that became the thing though? Like, what if it became that we started having horror movies that, like, every time we have a horror movie, we have to have this bizarre, like, side world where everything exists. I almost like that, but because we can't have, I mean, how many more movie plots can we have where people have cell phones and then have them break?
Or there's no servicing. It's like, oh, I've got no bars.
You know, actually, I watched a really interesting, we never talked about it on the podcast, but I watched Baghead.
I like that.
Recently, which is also like it doesn't really put
the Jake Gyllenhaal film at the war?
No.
That's Jarhead.
Oh.
This is the Duplass Brothers movie about the war.
Yes, this is the Duplass brothers movie about them wandering through an oil field. Is this
where they got
field.
Their mumblecore thing from? Because he has a bag over his head, so it's like,
I can't really understand.
Does have Greta Gerwig naked in it, which is really
it's
awesome.
Weird. Yeah,
wig and my angry inch. Am I right?
but it's good. I do like it. It's a cool movie.
And it doesn't have that like cell phone thing, does it? I don't remember if it does or not. It doesn't really matter. I mean, at a certain point with movies where you go out into the woods, there's not that much of a need for the cell phone thing happening,
It's accepted there that, you know, if you're not using cell phones, it's probably because there's no service. Or you just have that scene really quickly at the beginning where, oh, we have no service out here, so go ahead and leave your phones in the car or whatever.
It kind of makes it just, it like, what it really...
Isn't that what...
Go ahead, man.
What was that pre-preservation? Didn't they do that? Like, they didn't need the phones or no?
Yeah,
no, because the kids
remember.
Were texting each other. I don't remember.
I think that that everyone like in those situations, it's always a nostalgic idea. Like, oh, we won't need our cell phones. But when you go like, I went camping and got to the place and there was no signal. Like,
yeah,
it was like, you know, no service. And at first you're like, oh well, you know, whatever. You know, it's not going to be a big deal. But like, you know, 2 hours in, you're like, kind of get that itchy feeling. Like, yeah. I need to check my email somewhere. I need to drive to go get a signal.
Horror movies, I mean, what it does is it has made the outdoors a really boring horror movie environment, because movies where, like, movies that are very obviously like, oh, we're set. This could be like a suburban setting. But because there are cell phones, we're going to set it in a cabin in the woods because that's the easy way to solve the cell phone problem. Like, really what cell phones have done is they've ruined a lot of suburban horror movies or urban horror movies where they can't take place in the city because it's like, oh, if all this were actually happening, you would just call the cops. So you have to have the scene where it's like, oh, my cell phone got smashed. I dropped it in the water. I don't know where it is. I left it outside. Whatever.
Which leads me to say, like, one of the most unbelievable parts of Interior was when he's trying to log onto the Wi-Fi and he's having to guess the password. And I thought, come on, everybody knows as soon as you walk into someone's house, the first thing you ask for is their Wi-Fi password.
Yeah, what's your like, it's hello, it's like, hey, how's it going? What's your Wi-Fi password? Which are you?
So speaking of technology, though, that's the thing. I think it plays a nice role in this movie.
Yeah. I like the idea of the GoPros as far as setting up the sort of lo-fi security system rather than having them installed. It's just a guy. And like, Interior is, it seems like it's equal parts Insidious and Paranormal Activity, where it's kind of half of each of those.
I kind of got a little Resolution feel to it from it as well. The whole idea of the presence also being what's filming.
Oh yeah, it's good.
What's going on?
Yeah, that's later. That's sort of like that's spoiler time, guys. We're there already. So I guess we're not that early in. We're already like 20 minutes into. So
we've already they're already asleep from the technologable.
I know they're like the technologable podcast. Well, it's a meditation podcast. It's meant to help people sleep. So that's, you know, that's why it's there. I mean, you
listen
know.
To the soothing voices of Brian, Tyler, and Drew.
So I was I was at the Apple store the other day, and I found out that it would cost as much to fix my iPhone as it would be to replace it.
I want an Apple Watch.
at this point, I don't think you do.
I saw that. I saw
because I couldn't afford one for one.
Yeah. Drew, I read today that if you, since you are covered head to toe in tattoos, that like apparently the Apple Watch has a hard time functioning on people with like full sleeve dark tattoos on their
arms.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it's sending.
Why?
Which apparently why is that? It sends out small light signals from the back of it to kind of monitor your blood pressure or something like that. Which I was like, at the same time, I was like, that's both weird and kind of scary too, that this watch is sending out signals into your body to measure
that's
stuff.
That's gonna happen.
Your
man.
Blood pressure is high. Blood pressure is high.
We're getting some William Gibson talk now. This is where it's at the singularity.
I had a funny idea for a little short. I mean, you know, a short, but it was instead of Apple Care, it was Apple Cares, because when I was with my tech support stuff. So when you call Apple tech support, if you're calling from the phone that you've registered as like your Apple ID or whatever it is, your FaceTime ID, you know, it immediately is like, you call and it's like, hello, Brian, thanks for calling the Apple Care tech support line. I was like, holy shit, are you calling about? And it lists like all the stuff you own. You're like, oh, you know too much. And then I thought about like being as I sit there and get frustrated with like, God damn it. They're like, what's wrong, Brian? You sound frustrated. Just calm down.
Don't use that sort of language, Brian.
I can't let you. I'd like to get this replaced. I can't let you do that, Brian.
Right.
So it becomes like a How 9000 sort of thing.
We care about our employees, and we're not going to let them be confronted by your anger.
And then it sends one of those electric signals through your body and kills you.
And through the eye, yeah, and through your Apple Watch. instant, what are they called? Seizure, not seizure, stroke. That's what I'm looking for.
So as far in to,
so,
to
and give then an also idea. a little backstory about Interior. It was submitted for the 2015 Chattanooga Film Festival. That's how I got to know about it. We accepted it as one of our. It was actually the third. We only accepted three feature films, and it was one of the features that we accepted.
Like, what does that mean as far as like beyond what was commissioned? Not commissioned, but sure, sort of sought out.
Curated. Like so we curated. The majority of features are curated. I think we showed one submitted film last year, but this year we had a little, obviously from Interior, Tex Montana and stuff like that, we had a little bit of a better quality film feature submitted because, you know, not everyone wants to sit through a 2-hour student film.
Yeah.
But luckily, the director here knew that
Zachary Beckler, right?
Zachary Beckler kept it short and sweet, which was a good running time for a horror film.
Yeah, 123, I think.
Yeah, so he got accepted, and that's how we got to this. So,
And to give it just to synopsize it for those of you who have not heard, who just listen for the lovely, sonorous, beautiful, mellifluous voices that we have. Interior is a film about a guy named Sam who is commissioned by a former girlfriend, which we need to dig into that relationship a little bit.
We'll get to that one.
We'll get to that. It's weird. So he's commissioned by his former girlfriend, Allison. I actually wrote down the name this time. To test out the theory that her house is haunted. Because she and her husband and their child, Danielle, spelled D-A-N-Y-L, go on vacation or something, and so he stays there and sets up shop, Paranormal Activity, to test it out to see if he can prove that there are ghosts. Lo and behold, the house is actually haunted. Much to no surprise to anyone involved in this movie. Like, everyone is kind of over the idea of ghosts. They're just like, all right, I guess they exist.
It was
they're here.
Here. More like the deflate, like, oh, they're here.
Yeah, like friends you didn't want to come over.
But it was
on a
almost
Saturday
like
night.
The family like did the poltergeist thing, and they left the house and like, hey, we're gonna leave this situation while you figure out what's going on. We're not, you know, we've seen poltergeist. We don't want to be any part of what's happening during this. Let's jump right into the ex-girlfriend thing.
Yeah, I think that's something we need to explore. Like, I was really confused in the beginning because I thought Sam was actually her significant other. Because at a certain point in the beginning, she's like, oh, this flew off the wall and hit me in the head. I thought, like, wouldn't he be there? Aren't they together? It took me several minutes to realize that they weren't actually together.
But it
had been a while since they were together. That kid was fairly, you know, that kid was a few years old.
Yeah.
I did like when he was telling the husband how, you know, like trying to negate how long they actually
lay it down.
He's like, oh, yeah, I guess you could say we dated. It wasn't long. Well, how long? 2 years. That's a long time.
That's a long time to be dating.
And the awkwardness when they're on the bed, and I kept waiting, like, oh, God, the husband's going to walk in and see this. Go.
It is, but I still think, my thing is, I think it's completely negated at that point by how long she's been in this relationship at that point.
It's like, also in college.
That was the other thing, too. It wasn't like it was her last relationship, it doesn't seem like. It wasn't like these guys had just gotten together.
Which I'm weird. It seems strange.
I don't know if that's his daughter, though. That could be
true.
A previous. That could be
Sam's daughter.
Yeah, there you go.
What's weird for me about it is that it doesn't seem like they're close, but yet he's like the first person she calls to invite into her home,
right.
Which seems really weird. Like, I think the husband actually took all of this relatively well. Like, oh, so your ex-boyfriend is going to be hiding out in our house trying to find a ghost for 2 days. Like, I would almost be interested in a sequel where it's just a road movie where they're talking about all of the like all of the relationship implications of letting an ex-boyfriend stay there.
That's the sequel, is the car ride to wherever they were going.
So he's there with cameras, and we didn't lock anything. So.
And yeah, he's like, that
shit, I left my weed.
I left halfway away, you're like, oh, shit.
We left the bag of weed that we were going to smoke with our child. What's weird, like, that was a cartel's amount of marijuana that they left behind. That was not like a dime bag, because he smoked weed the entire movie.
Well, it is Florida. They're near the ocean, and that's where they run the drugs.
We don't know what Drake does.
Drake could be a drug dealer.
Yeah, we don't know. Drake the drug dealer? Yeah, that could totally work. I mean, he looks like lawyer by day, wildcat by night. I don't know.
Like a DA, and he like gets into the evidence locker.
Yeah, totally. I can see that.
The spelling of the daughter's name was really awful. It was atrocious.
Even it bothered Florida. Danielle with a Y?
Yeah. How did you get Danielle out of that? Danny L? Maybe. I was trying to figure it out. Danny L?
Listen,
Danielle?
You can't blame the daughter for this, but I think at some point in every young woman's life, they go through this phase where they're just tired of the way their name was spelled. I know my sister did, where she decided that her name couldn't be spelled Casey, and she had to spell it Kaycie. I remember she was working at a Buffalo Wild Wings down the road from us, and I went to eat, and I was like, I guess I'll sit in your section. Don't spit in my food. I mean, you know, I wasn't very nice to you growing up. But I'm seeing her name tag and be like, what the fuck are you doing?
What are we not enough? Is your name not important enough for us anymore?
Mom, you know, you wait till I tell Mom and Dad that you've just abandoned your family.
And then she spit in your food.
Yes. She's like, thanks. And then she didn't come back and refill it. I didn't tip her.
Well, they make a joke about it. Like, oh, I was trying for a, like, it's obviously meant to be a skewering of really bizarre spellings of names, because, man, names are, I think that talking about the way people spell names is kind of like the airplane food joke of 2015. Like, I don't think we can go into like, what is the deal with spelling names these days? But
what's the deal?
What's the deal? Names? Yeah, there you go. Do it again. I'm sorry. I walked all over it.
Oh, no, it's all right.
I called you.
Speaking of Seinfeld, Hulu, $180 million for Seinfeld rights.
What?
Because they need more money.
Hulu bought the rights to show Seinfeld on their shitty platform.
Because Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld aren't rich enough.
I don't know who's going to do that. That sounds like a terrible idea.
And Hulu Plus still shows you commercials.
Yeah.
What's the deal with Hulu Plus?
I hope they make a commercial for that.
They will. You know they will. It's really weird. Because it feels like Seinfeld's a great show, granted, but it's one of those things that's just on. And you watch it because it's on. You're not going to seek it out. You're not like, you know what I need? Seinfeld reruns.
Well, I was hoping Netflix would get it because I just wanted to put it on in the background sometimes.
I think that's the biggest.
They have Friends now, right?
The problem with Hulu is that, it's a lot of work. Like, Hulu's way more work than Netflix is.
Yes, I agree with you.
Like, I feel like I have to log in every time, which I don't have to do with Netflix.
You know what? This is a good segment for Technologable.
Yeah, see? There you go.
Yahoo Screen and Community works pretty well, and it's pretty nice to have it.
I haven't watched any of it.
Is that paid, or is that?
Nope. I forgot that was even a thing.
I forgot that was ready. That was a thing, too.
Yeah, it's worth it, because it's free.
Also, side note, music for this film, Spectrostatic has a song in it, which is...
Cuervo,
who Alex Cuervo will have on the podcast here soon to talk about his music. Also, if you're around for the Frightening Ass Film Festival, we early sign show he will be doing his first live show with us.
Sweet. Oh wow! Ooh.
Yeah, so
I'll be there.
If you're a fan of John Carpenter music,
I'll be there.
Spectrostatic,
which we all are.
Oh, and also John Carpenter will be making a guest appearance.
He's going to be the DJ. John Carpenter is going to be spinning some tracks.
All John Carpenter is going to do is play the records through his fingernails.
And then play
the
low
pan now?
Yeah, that's what I imagine. God, John Carpenter's fingernails. It's like, yeah, low pan. or Chris Sarandon in Fright Night.
Indeed.
Okay. Also, how about when she's reading that letter at the beginning? That letter alone would have made me move out of that house. It's like, oh,
seriously, yeah.
What a shitty letter to get from a former owner of a house.
What I mean, that house, one of my only problems. I didn't have many problems with this movie at all. I was really impressed by it.
Yeah.
Though was the house.
No.
I know the whole point is it's supposed to be kind of underwhelming, but I didn't think it was old enough to have that history.
It wasn't.
Like, that
no.
was the thing.
It was not. Unless it happened 6 months ago.
Right. Like, it's like,
she just bought
this place.
Yeah.
Well, we're never told it's an old ghost.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she's been in a psychiatric ward for 3 months. Whoa. That's my scary voice.
Is that right?
That's it.
I imagine you stand outside of your house at Halloween and do that.
It's candy. What's the deal with candy?
And mothers do keep their kids away from that guy, though.
Yeah.
Hey, kids.
Yeah, the house is definitely not old enough. It looks like it was built in 2007. Let's be honest.
Let's just assume that was the former house was destroyed by a hurricane that was found in the.
There's
no basements in Florida, so that can't be what.
But I mean, otherwise, other than that, as far as early,
we do have to also take into account that this was a micro budget film, so I'm sure they couldn't have.
And that's what was so impressive, though, considering it's pretty much one guy in one location the whole time. My big worry, especially early on, was even an hour and 20 minutes, I was like, how is this going to be interesting for an hour and 20 minutes? How am I not going to get bored by this? And that's the one thing, until I don't like the climax, the last act, I guess we'll say. But I thoroughly enjoyed everything else that came up. It was entertaining. I liked that character. It was like Bill Hader is what the actor kind of kept reminding me of.
That's who I could not put my finger on. I was like, who does he remind me of? I think Bill Hader is a really nice analog for that. I think he kind of looks like Bill Hader. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that too. Yeah.
I think I thought of it.
I just thought he was.
Go ahead, Drew.
No, I just want to know who you thought of. Now. No, it's fine.
I didn't think of anybody else. No, I'm just saying. Like, I think I felt the opposite. I enjoyed the first half, but I really liked the sort of, I mean, almost like Kubrick-esque at the. I mean, that's definitely hyperbole, but I like the sort of surreal ending. I feel like most of it, the movie that kept popping into my head was the original Evil Dead, which, like, I think as long as we're talking about micro-budget movies, it's interesting to think about what, you know, how much money would Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell and company have spent on the first Evil Dead if they were making it now? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's something that I kept thinking about is what would they do with that film and what would it look like? I think visually it probably would look very similar to this. I mean, when they were making those films, they were making them on a very tight budget. I mean,
yeah.
Did the first Evil Dead even cost $1 million? I don't know that it did, which was basically a micro budget in 1979.
Yeah, and think about the idea that at that time, those guys didn't have Final Cut Pro on their computer or the ability to download and watch immediately anything that may have gone wrong during the shoot. Be like, oh, shit, let's go back and fix that.
Because I think they did actually have some stuff go wrong.
Buying.
What's that?
They're still buying, film at that point.
Right,
exactly. Renting cameras and all. No, it's so much easier nowadays to do this.
Basically,
make it look good.
Basically, what we're saying is if you want to be a filmmaker and you're not doing it, you're a pussy.
I know. Like, it really is. I mean, one of the things I have to say about this movie
is... for both of you when I say that.
The horrible podcast says... No, it's actually one of the things I would definitely agree with you guys on. And as far as, like, micro-budget movies go, I was consistently impressed with what this movie was able to accomplish with camera movement. I mean, in the beginning, I kind of expected it to be a rather sort of, like, stolid... kind of like camera sits here and watches our character sort of move around. Like, that's how it starts. But there are actually some really impressive camera moves throughout the movie. And I kept thinking about how they were able to accomplish this on what was very, like, obviously a micro budget. I think that's sort of the elephant in the room that you have to talk about when you talk about movies like this is that this movie was definitely done on a very small budget. But I was actually, I love horror movies. And so when I come into movies like this, I'm trying to find like what is sort of the thing that is interesting about this movie? What can I take from this movie? And I think the camera work is really second. I mean, like very few movies do some of what this movie is able to do. Like the end sequence, I still don't know how they did what they did at the very end. And I think it's really interesting. Like I love that movies today are approaching like how they make it with a sense of art and like trying to use very practical things instead of just going like, oh, we'll just CGI it. Like that seems to be what a lot of movies do. And this is like, this uses practical, like not even practical effects, but just like practical camera moves to accomplish a lot of really cool stuff.
Well, I think too, what it goes to show you is that, you know, even though, like I said, even though, you know, pretty much anybody can make a film these days, it still goes a long way when you actually have talent to make that film. Yeah. Like you're putting more into it than your standard. I mean, it could have totally been just a found footage film.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a found footage film. It was, you know, we got some found footage shots, but it was told more in a narrative style where it was, that was just used as to show us what was going on in the house or what he was, you know, viewing, which I thought was cool. We got to see the view of him watching the camera, like his view of the camera and stuff like that. And also, you know, how important it is to find someone who can pull off
being
the only person on camera basically the whole time, the whole way through the film.
Yeah, he's one of the better actors I've seen in one of these lower budget movies like this in a while. I mean, he was half of what made it interesting, if not more than half at times. Yeah. I mean, he was able to care that he was funny. He was engaging. I like it wasn't a character we didn't need to get deep into his backstory to kind of get who he was. He was just kind of a regular dude, you know. You could imagine yourself in that situation, but he was very entertaining doing it. I was impressed with him.
Imagine myself in that situation because I would totally dig through everybody's drawers if I was watching their house.
And also their bureaus and chests of drawers.
Oh, yeah. By the way, that guy's name is Christopher Carullo.
Yeah, right.
Cool. Yeah, I mean,
shout out to Christopher Carullo.
I mean, again, like going back to, I don't mean to too heavily like crib from Evil Dead, but I mean, a lot of this movie reminds me of, you know, Bruce Campbell's basically on screen for 30 minutes by himself in Evil Dead 2. I mean, just sort of hamming it up. And I mean, that's kind of what's done here. I mean, what I think the movie does deftly is that it introduces some things. It has almost like a, what's that? John dies at the end.
Yeah.
It almost has that kind of like, oh, come on, kind of vibe to it. Especially like when he finds the knives more than once.
Right.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, the door open again, like Jesus.
I think tonally it takes the right angle where it doesn't take itself too seriously. And I think it hits all of the right marks throughout the film. Do you know what I mean? Like the pacing is just right. Like it introduces all this stuff. I think the mythology is weak. I wish it just, like, for me, it's weird that we get the phone calls throughout where it's like, ah, let me tell you a little bit more about this book I'm reading. But I mean, we need it, but I kind of wish we'd gotten some of it from another source or something. I don't really, like, I don't know. It almost feels like I like that he's in it and does a good job, but I almost feel like we need somebody else beyond the pizza guy in the film.
Pizza guy who is also the director.
Which is, that
yeah,
was
Zachary Beckler, yeah.
Beckler, yeah.
Funny enough, just so you guys know, from everything I'd seen of Zachary and pictures I saw, I was like, oh, I guess, I mean, you know, in my mind, I had him made out as Guillermo del Toro, kind of that, you know, kind of nerdy glasses guy. This guy is like 7 foot tall.
Yeah, he's a really tall guy.
He is so tall.
He is so tall.
I was like, holy shit, you are tall.
Like, he is tall to the point where you're like, it is conversation worthy. Where you're like, man, tall people are tall, but this guy's tall beyond tall.
Like that shot I saw of you in front of the marquee, I just thought you were standing really close to the camera and the marquee was far behind you. But no, you were literally touching the top of the marquee with your head.
So, no, I don't know. I mean, I wanted either more of them. I guess, like, this movie you don't need, like, oh, my God, here's all this. Like, I felt like it had enough, but I feel like maybe it came in too, like, too big a burst. Do you know what I mean? Like, here's like a few pages of exposition that I'm going to read you. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah. I think it was almost, superfluous to it. I think the cool thing about it, thought, is it was almost like, it's almost like a parody of, mm-hmm. it's almost like a spoof mm-hmm. of these type movies in the way it was set up and the way it was written. And a lot of the jokes hit so well, much better than actual spoofs of these movies go. Mm-hmm. Like, a haunted, what was the one with the Wayans haunted? They just had the sequel to Haunted House, or
I think it was Haunted House.
It was the different, it was something like that. And either way,
they've done another.
They did all the scary movies, but then they did Haunted House, which was the Paranormal Activity.
But I mean, it was this is so well done in the scenes, like where he is kind of annoyed by the ghost, or where he's like in the bathroom,
exasperated,
when he's getting high and he's playing with the lights and making all the faces and it plays all those jokes pretty well. And then I felt so much more important than the backstory or anything else. And I just didn't think it was that important. It was like the backstory you get in those parody movies. I don't remember what exactly was haunting, Marlon Wayne's house, nor did it matter, why that was the case and all. I agree. Maybe there are other ways to get it, but I don't know. I kind of like that because it kept him connected. He was going to be connected to somebody. If you're by yourself in this place, you're going to need someone to talk to or have some contact with.
Well, maybe we needed just more but smaller bursts, because then you get, like, if we're going to introduce that they have a backstory, like if we're going to introduce that they have a history, then maybe we can... Like that might muddy the plot to say, like, oh, well, what could have been kind of stuff. But I almost kind of expected that a little bit, like, as they could, like, I kind of figured she would call and they would talk, but I expected more of like, oh, this, I see what could have been or something. Like, he's not a reflective guy, so I don't imagine, like, as a character, he's not like a reflective dude, but I kind of imagined that some of that dialogue would happen. So I don't know, like, it was fine. Like, I don't know. I think I expected some of that, but didn't get it. So I wonder, like, I see the value in them setting up this relationship, but it doesn't really do, like, nothing really happens with it. You know what I mean?
I was hoping that, like, they go, when the husband was like, oh, you guys used to date, huh? And the guy was like, yeah, we used to. And he would cut to the sex scene from Team America. Like, it would just cut, like, to their...
like an overly long, uncomfortably long sex scene.
Yeah, it's like him remembering what their dating life was like.
Well, you know what? I mean, the great thing about movies of this sort of stature and budget is that you don't have to take it so seriously. Like, you don't have to say, like, we're gonna out Insidious or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, it can be more humorous and take more chances. And I think that's one of the things this movie does well, is that, like, and this is also coming from someone who, like, I am very in the minority where I did not like Insidious that much. So I feel like this whole spate of, like, haunted house movies is overdone. But I kind of like that with these kind of movies, they can take a lot of chances and not necessarily take themselves so seriously and do so many things that's, like, overwrought and, like, we're going to out-scary the other scary things. Because this movie is sort of, like, not unnerving, but, like, disarming. Do you know what I mean? Where you're like, oh, this is kind of funny. But then I watched it with headphones, which I think is the best way to watch it, because the sound design is really interesting in it.
Yeah, there are some legitimately scary parts that are punctuated by the sound that the creature makes. And
so when it shows up at the end, when you're hearing this stuff, it actually is, you're like, holy shit. Like, you're, because it, the first third of the movie to half the movie kind of disarms you, where you're like, oh yeah, it's kind of funny. He doesn't really care that he's the opposite of what I would be. Like, he doesn't seem to even care that ghosts actually exist.
He just needed money is what I got. I mean, he didn't have anything else going on, I don't think.
That's right. She did promise him some money to do it. So
I guess, said, what sort of job do you get with that degree? He's like, this.
See it. Yeah. So I think the scares are more pronounced because of the sort of tone that the movie carries for most of it. So, like, at the end, I'm like, I legitimately felt like, oh God, this is kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah. And then we also have that, which we're going to spoil it. I'm not going to.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean,
so, when that, so the girl, so at the end we have the call from the ex saying that the daughter is seeing him outside the window.
Right. Mm-hmm. What is, well, the, we get that at the very beginning even.
We do get that.
Is that, does the movie begin in medias res? Like, I felt like I'd seen that, okay.
At 4:19 or whatever when he's in the bathroom.
Right.
So what do you, what is your theory on what had happened then? What is going on since he obviously couldn't have gone to the house that the girl that they're staying in?
Time travel.
I don't know.
Time travel. It's some sort of, I think it's some sort, like I said that as a joke a second ago, but
well,
I don't think
that,
it is.
We have that. We get that very long scene where he kind of the camera spins.
Yeah.
At one point, I was kind of
What were you
watching it and also kind of zoning out? But I thought I was at the I was in the end sequence of the black hole.
Right.
Where they're like they're all drifting through things, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah.
Kind of, my computer broke.
I mean, it kind of felt like 2001 a bit, like. The actual book, not the movie, where it's everything slows down and there's this elongated sequence of like moving around and so I like that, but I think I think he was possessed for a bit in the ghost, but like I think that it was a projection, but from being possessed. Because he saw, like, there's a lot of that stuff that goes unexplored. I kind of like that it doesn't explain it, but there are several scenes where, throughout the movie, I mean, it lays it out where he's seeing himself through these cameras.
Right.
And there's one scene where he sees himself seeing himself through the camera. Do you remember that? Where
yes.
It's like three levels of messed up.
Inception.
It is. It's kind of inceptioned. So I liked all of that stuff. I kind of wish. I mean, it's one of the things I'm really excited to see another movie from Zachary Beckler, because it's like, I want to see what he does with this stuff. He seems to have a pretty keen eye for sort of like media, not satire, like this isn't that satirical, but just sort of taking tropes from horror movies and turning them askew a little bit. Because I liked all of the sort of surreal, like who, like what directors do the surreal stuff like that really well? I can't think of, like, there are people who do the, like, oh, it's kind of flipped on its head. Like, we don't quite know what's going on. Not Cronenberg. Like, that's the name that's coming to mind, but I had to say it because it's not right.
I mean, I just feel it was very similar. Like, you'd already brought up John Does the End. I mean, I just feel it's very similar to that with one of these. It's more like some sort of extra dimensional idea, possibly more than, like, time travel or something like that. Just that idea, like I said, that, you know, possibly that he is possessed, but there's some other dimension he's going to. I mean, that's what I felt.
He's
with
there
the whole,
and not there.
Yeah, with the whole, which was my least favorite part of, with the whole spinning trick there. It was absolutely useless and did nothing for it. That's the only thing that maybe where I was just like, I see no point to that whatsoever. It just did nothing for me. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was the most useless part of the movie and could have done without that. But I like I feel like that's kind of the thing where it is some sort of dimensional shifty kind of thing. That's how I saw it, at least. And then I also just tried to look for no explanation in what was going on. It was just some, you know, how whatever the creepy shit that he'd set up was. It's creepy that he's in one place. It's always creepy to be in two places at one time. Like, I'm still in, like, if you're talking about surreal, I mean, David Lynch, of course, and then going to Lost Highway.
I don't think it goes to that length, but it's definitely more surreal than most horror movies. Like, a lot of the horror is not supernatural, it's like surrealism, and I like that.
Yeah. But my favorite, like, I still think one of the creepiest things ever in almost anything is when fucking eyebrowless Robert Blake is sitting there saying, "I'm in your house, right now." And he has him call him, and he talks to him at his house while he's looking right at him, like that idea of being someone being two places at once, like that.
That Lost Highway, it was the I think it was the first film that I ever saw with the whole watching the video of someone in your house filming you while you slept. Yeah, that was very strange. That and Marilyn Manson with the God, that was ridiculous.
Yeah. That entire movie.
Academy Award winner Patricia Arquette getting banged by Marilyn Manson.
Yeah, that entire movie is completely messed up. But
good soundtrack.
Totally good soundtrack. Perfect Drug is a great song.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know. I like the camera spin thing because I like when weird stuff happens in movies. Like this, I love the sound of it. It sounded really cool, and I would love to see it on the big screen. I think it would be really entrancing. I don't know. Like I don't know if you
were there, but they played it at the Chattanooga Film Festival.
I was. Cool. I did not.
Oh, no, you weren't, because you weren't there yet. I think because we showed that Thursday night.
Oh yeah, I wasn't. That's right. I was not quite there yet. I would, you know, I was working though. My boss is an asshole.
Oh, that's me.
But yeah. No, I
don't know, it reminds me of the experimental movies that I watched when we were at college and things like that. And I just never done anything for me. That's what it called to mind.
Yeah.
I think
it just lasted too long too.
I agree with you. It kind of reminded me like the scene in the battery where he's in the car for entirely too long and you feel. And I know it's different. I know that you would say like, oh, but it's different because it's showing you like how tedious that would get. But I kind of like it kind of went around almost exactly like the spinning itself. It like went around in a circle on itself for me because I was like, oh, this is going on too long. I'm like, oh, wait, but it's still going now. Like I'm interested. I don't know. Like I totally see what you're saying and I agree with you. But I just liked it and you did. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
I see what you're saying.
I don't even think I would be, I was totally against it. I just think if it had been shorter, I think I would have probably been like, oh, okay, that was a cool trick. And now I see where it's getting us here. I felt at that point it verged, like I said, it verged on the indulgent experimental side of things, which, you know, is not where I typically stress.
But you know, many horror, like I agree with you 100%, but so many horror movies are self-indulgent in the other extreme where they're like so tied to tropes. They're like, I guess that wouldn't be self-indulgent. They're just like, we're going to do this by the numbers. We're going to just make it's like, we've seen this movie before. So I like that it does something just way out of the ordinary where it's like, you know what? We're going to put this in here. Like, right. I think it's why I would never make a good horror movie because I think there would be scenes where I'd get and I. It seems like they had the idea like, oh, this morning I was messing around with the camera and look what I did. And they're like, holy shit, let's do more of that. That's weird. And I feel like if I made horror movies, I would do that because that's kind of like when I made short films in college, not to brag. That's what I always did. Like people would, they would be shown at the festival they would have. And people always would look, watch mine and go, what? I called one Melon Cholera and I was sitting next to a guy who didn't know who I was. He was like, who the fuck would name a short film that? And I'm sitting right there.
And you're like, I don't know.
Some dick bag.
Yeah.
Fuck this guy.
Fuck that movie.
You back then. You
I do what? I
would have fought him.
Yeah, I probably would have. I was in my, I scrunched in my chair just like, oh, I can't believe I made this. Anyway.
I absolutely made the most John Carpenter-ish John Carpenter ripoff of John Carpenter ever. I mean, it was just it was all a one shot scene. I mean, there was even Michael Myers in it. It was totally like a scene cut out of Halloween if someone were making Halloween just like John Carpenter, but acting like John Carpenter. Not saying that I was as good as that, but like it was so there's nothing original in it whatsoever.
But I remember watching that after Drew filmed it, and the only thing he had in there was the thing that I really liked is that he wasn't scared to have nudity in it. And I was like, man, Drew.
Well,
Drew went full frontal.
There was a bra and a real, well, more frightening, we had a real knife because we had no fake knives. And so
it was a bra and full frontal nudity, and then he showed it at the Baptist Student Union.
I think that's like. Eventually, like most video game writers or a lot of video game writers end up making video games because that's the seems like the logical conclusion. So I think at a certain point, we'll probably end up making some dumb shit. And like just because we have to put our money where our mouth is at a certain point.
You know, this is completely off topic and I don't know why.
Everything is off topic. Is it about cell phones?
I watched 8mm.
Great movie.
Over the weekend, which is a great movie. But you know what? The movie that's what's wrong with that film and that would make
even Joel Schumacher.
Joel Schumacher, but what would make that movie even better if it was someone other than Nicolas Cage?
Well, that was my second character.
Because that movie is so strong in its like how disturbing it is. But every time I hear Nicolas Cage talk in that film, I'm like, God damn it, dude. You just are not delivering like you used to.
Andrew Kevin Walker is just such a good screenwriter.
It needed someone with a lot more weight in that main role than Nicolas Cage to it.
Well, he was totally bankable still at that point. Like, not just like, oh, he'll be in any movie that will have him, but he was still totally bankable at that point.
Yeah, that was his.
But that's the thing is that I don't.
Strong period.
I don't remember him. Maybe it's just because the other movies he did were so bombastic that his ridiculousness fit in, but that movie was so dark and gritty that it needed. I mean, Joaquin Phoenix was fine. Was
he
great.
He was awesome.
Yeah, but
Dance with the Devil. Devil don't change. Devil.
Yeah, it needed
you.
Someone else in that. It needed someone else in that.
I mean, it's weird because he's only a few years removed from leaving Las Vegas at this point. You know what I mean? Like, he's like 5 years removed from leaving Las Vegas, and this is at the turning point of becoming parody.
I mean, he's already done Con Air,
Snake Eyes.
The Rock.
He did Snake Eyes. Wasn't that a John Woo movie?
No, that was Brian De Palma.
That's De Palma.
That's right. Snake Eyes was De Palma.
It's just got that awesome single take shot at the beginning.
Yeah.
I think it takes two takes, but it's really awesome.
But that's like the only
triptych.
What? And the rest of it sucks.
De Palma,
the rest
triptych.
Of the movie's not good.
It's not as bad as Mission to Mars. Holy shit, that's some bad.
Was
De Palma.
That also De Palma? Was that released the same time as Red Planet?
Yep.
Who was Red Planet?
Mars movies.
Yeah. Well, which one was which one? I don't remember which one had
Val
Kilmer's
in Red Planet.
Okay. Which one was Mission to Mars?
Everybody was in there, like Tim Robbins and.
Which one had was Gary Sinise in one people. Of them?
He was in all of them.
Gary Sinise was in every night.
Gary Sinise was in Snake Eyes. He's in Snake Eyes.
Was he not in Mission to Mars or?
Oh, he certainly probably was. I just don't remember. I remember Tim Robbins for some reason.
You guys talk about stuff. I'm gonna look this up.
Gary Sinise, a proud American now.
Yeah, it was Tim Robbins, Gary Sinise. The thing that really bothered me about that movie, I still remember the distinct moment at which I really thought Mission to Mars might be one of the worst things I'd ever seen. Is like when it flashed back to a scene earlier in the movie to remind you about this that they were talking about. I was like, dude, it's not even 2 hours. I can remember that far back. I didn't need that shot to remind me of this. It was like it was when they had the double helix made of like M&Ms or Skittles or something, and they had to like fucking flash back to it. And they're like,
they're not
going
to understand.
I
they're
don't
not going to understand.
That reminder.
Yeah.
Oh,
I
love De Palma. God, I love
that was
De Palma.
That was a very bad period for space movies because that was also Mars movies because Ghosts of Mars was also so bad.
It was the period where they were like, you know what? We have CG now. Let's make everything.
It
we
was so everything. Those movies were so bad. Ghosts of Mars, so
I've
bad.
I have a soft spot still for Ghosts of Mars. Still have a soft spot.
Well,
for
it's
it.
Still it's John
it's totally
Carpenter.
Not John Carpenter. It's totally not though. Like
I just
the font.
I just don't like that it. Starts with, you know, the character is going to survive.
Oh, absolutely agree with you there. And yeah, it doesn't have the font, and
it's
doesn't have a good John Carpenter ending. So I was against that. And Ice Cube has never been someone I've been terribly that fond of.
Come on, man. Ice Cube was good in Boys in the Hood.
Welcome to Earth.
That's Will Smith, racist.
Yeah, in Boys in the Hood.
He was good in Boys in the Hood. He was also good in Anaconda.
Very funny in the 22 Jump Street film.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course, because he's playing his own
persona that he's developed. And the one that the angry cops mixed with, you know, his angry.
Yeah, the irony of him playing
cops. He looks so constipated in Anaconda.
Yeah, he looks pretty constipated in every movie because he does the squinty, almost open mouth thing.
Yeah. There's Anaconda though. He really it's like the whole movie. It's like, and maybe he was because probably on a trip like that down the river like that, you're probably gonna have some you know some bowel problems.
He was probably eating a lot of like packaged
like that,
cheese.
I don't imagine the bowel problems are you're constipated. I imagine you're just shitting the whole
time. That too? Yeah.
I was on a trip like that, I would have to just like make them feed me over I'd have to like just hang my ass over the water just. Watch it go in, then come out immediately.
Christ.
It's just a straight pipe.
It's just a funnel. It's just basically a funnel.
I think that you just described Human Centipede 3, right? Christ. That sounds like what that probably is.
That is so disgusting.
Asses to elbows.
All right. So, what do you guys think about the ending of this movie?
I enjoyed
it. I thought the very ending I liked. Yeah.
Yeah. When the ghost of future. The ghost of Christmas future
Sam
shows up.
Yes, I actually I liked it. I thought that was a pretty neat costume. Like the
it was great.
I'm saying if you watch this movie, watch it with headphones on, because that all that stuff sounded really cool.
There were a couple of scenes where they had the like the hands would come out from around the door that were really creepy.
Yeah.
Practical effects the whole way, and I loved the creature, the spirit slash ghost that showed up that then kind of possessed him and turned his eye. Made him look like an extra from the Event Horizon creepy video.
I was going to say jug face eyes, because didn't she get
some,
jug...
Or some Evil Dead's. That was some Evil Dead look, too.
Yeah, Evil Dead. There was... it had some... I think it also had some jug face in there, because What's-Her-Name's eyes had that look at when she was... another movie people need to watch is Jug Face. I've already mentioned The Battery, but I like the... I thought the ending was pretty cool. It wasn't overwrought. I kind of liked that it went in a bizarre direction, but it didn't go for too long, because I was like, oh, he's walking outside. Are they going to show this? Nope. Okay, good. Excellent. Excellent ending. Great. Wait, Drew, you're breaking up. So, hold on, say that again.
What do you think? Did he kill him?
I think he did. Yeah. Or maybe he didn't. Yeah. Maybe he's just going to haunt. I don't know. The thing is, this ghost doesn't seem to want to kill people. It just wants to fuck with them.
Yeah. I like the idea that he didn't know whether he was actually still there until she saw him.
Yeah,
when she first walked in, I was like, oh my God, does she even see him?
He didn't know either, and that's what I liked, is he didn't know. He was waiting.
Yeah.
I liked it. That was a really good moment.
I almost didn't think we needed the other after that.
He had the scene where he was like looking through the camera and saw his body up against the bookcase.
But he wasn't there.
Right.
Except in the camera. So that's where that alternate dimension stuff, I think, came into it as well.
I actually liked that I could see how they did the effects. Like, I kind of, with the camera stuff, I saw how they did that. And that actually made me a little happy to go, like, oh, I could pick this apart a little bit. So I thought that was all really cool. And I like the ending. Like, this movie, I mean, at an hour and 23, I mean, the running time is really 83 minutes is perfect. I don't think it overstayed it well. It's welcome. I mean, it's engaging and. Like it has a lot of promise. I would love to see another movie. Like hopefully this is a step towards something else as well.
I do too. I hope he submits again next year. I would if it's anything.
Well, that's a bit presumptuous of you. You want him to submit to you? Jesus.
He got asshole. He got you there. We loved your movie. Can you audition again?
Send it in again. Maybe we'll like it. Maybe we won't. Well, no. Fuck it.
Submit.
I don't know where this movie is. I don't know where this movie is available to watch. So if you're around any festival that's showing it, go check it out. Yeah. I'm not sure of the schedule of where else they're showing. He's won a couple awards. He won Atlanta Horror Film Festival. It's definitely getting some notice. So if you're around any areas that are showing Interior, or any film festivals that are showing Interior, you should go check it out.
I agree. I definitely recommend it.
Yeah.
B3.
And, hopefully we'll get Zach onto the podcast to talk about
soon.
Another movie.
Hopefully soon, to talk about horror stuff.
Maybe, maybe he can tear us a new one for talking about his film, so.
All right.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys. I'm Brian.
And I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew.
Talk to you next time.
Horrible podcast. Broadcast.